Blog Talk Radio.
The year goes when I'm doing these shows. It's like, oh my God, is that possible that it's already this late? But it is. It's February 19th, and it's a cold one everywhere. So hope y'all are staying warm. I have a little monarch caterpillar out in my garden that I'm just looking at, going, "You must be freezing." I feel like taking care of it, but I'm just going to let him do his nature thing, and hope for the best. My name is Annie Lindstrom, and I am host of the show, which is Talkupy. Talkupy is about people who do good things for community and make the world a better place. This is raw live radio, so have patience and forgiveness for us as we try to get into our flow for the show. We try to do a conversation on this show and keep you with us for at least, we usually do an hour, so it goes back and forth, and we get into our rhythm, or we don't sometimes, but we do our best to do it. And if any technical difficulties happen, don't even worry. Been there, done that. We'll get it all back on the air. So stick with us. You can follow Talkupy on Twitter at Talkupy_radio or on iTunes. We're getting a few more listeners from that direction. You can also find my blog, photos, videos, and show notes, as well as archives of more than now 140 shows. The last shows that we did was with Beth Foster of the Mercy Junction Justice and Peace Center in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That was last Thursday. And on last Tuesday, we had life artist and climate activist. He wouldn't like the word activist, but he's out there. He's everywhere. I think Jimmy Betts has wings. He is in a new city every day, but he was a pleasure to talk to, and I hope that you guys will go ahead and listen back to those episodes when you have time, but let's concentrate on this one for now. You can also click on the contact tab to send me listener mail. I got a wonderful letter last week from an old friend who gave me a lot of encouragement about the show, and it was really a delight and just made my week, so really very pleased about that. You can also write in with comments or suggestions for future guests. Always looking to hear that. I'm trying to make the show more collaborative this year, so please, please take advantage of that. Also, I have a few special notes today. I wanted to note that we'll have Eva Westheimer of the Coal of Mount. She's going to talk about Mountain Justice Spring Break, and that's going to be coming up here in March, so that's going to be very, very germane to things that are going on, especially with that train exploding down in southern West Virginia this past week. It's as if they don't have enough going on with mountains being blown up. Now trains carrying Bakken shale oil are coming through town and blowing to pieces like you've never seen, like in a movie or something. It's ridiculous. But anyway, Eve is going to talk about the spring break and everything that people are doing to push back against some of that nonsense that's going on down there. Also, I want to congratulate Earth Guardians. They have raised the money that they were looking to raise for their Ryzen 2015 campaign. Good way to go, you guys. They're the ones who close out our show with Be the Change, and hopefully we'll have them on. They're going to have their youth council is going to be able to meet now, and they've been assembling that over the last couple of months. And finally, I want to let you know that I swear to God, after the show, I am going to go and put up a link on my blog to a clip for Emma the Pig, which was something done by John Chester, a guest on our show on June 19th, 2012. if you want to listen to that. That was one of the very early interviews that I did with a big-time hero of mine. He produced this piece for Oprah's Super Soul Sunday Story, and it's about a pig giving birth at Apricot Lane Farms down in Southern California. And I'm telling you, this is, he's a world-class filmmaker, John Chester is, so you've got to definitely check that out. And we want to give them a shout-out for their new baby, Bowden. That's the name of the baby. It's a different kind of name. But I also want to thank Ronald Jenkes for his song Disorganized Fun. And you can check him out at ronaldjenkes.com and Earth Guardians for Be the Change at the end of the show. But without further ado, I want to bring on my guest for today, who is Dr. Jorge Chu. He is a returning guest to Talkupy. Welcome to the show, Jorge. How are you doing this morning?
Very good, Annie. Thank you very much. A little bit cold here in Ohio, but doing real good.
Yeah, now we tried to connect with you while you were in for another meeting a couple weeks ago, but it turned out we scheduled the show, both of us, kind of oblivious to the fact that it was Super Bowl Sunday night. So we just left it up to God and said, you know, bring us another time. And he did. So that's really good. I'm really glad that you're able to join me this week on your trip up here. But yeah, you picked the cold week to come up. I'm telling you, it's ridiculous. But yeah. But you just wear a lot of clothes, and we'll get through it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So the last time that Jorge was with us, he is a bombero and a paramedic in Guatemala City, and he is Cleveland Clinic-trained thoracic surgeon. And he was on the air with us when we started this whole round of Talkupies that have been going on since November 4th. Him and Giles were on the show to talk about a very happy occasion. They had Giles had put out done a fundraiser, a Kickstarter or GoFundMe to raise some money to get you a vehicle because when he came down and took pictures of you, your vehicle was not running very well at all. And the vehicle was purchased and everything was hunky-dory and ready to go, and you got it actually down to Guatemala. And kind of what things don't always have a storybook ending, I guess.
Yeah,
is what happened. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what, you know, since we last talked to you, what exactly happened to your vehicle, and how are we going to fix that situation?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Annie, for this opportunity. Let me recap a little bit for the listeners that did not hear, our interview in the past and just what I do.
Yes.
So actually, as you said, I'm actually a doctor that was trained here in the United States and went back to my country. I've been a firefighter since I came out of high school. And I do that as a volunteer job. I mean, that's Guatemala depends majorly on a all volunteer fire department, which we are nationwide. It's not only in the city, but we have 174 stations all around Guatemala, all around the country,
mm-hmm.
And we have more than 8,000 volunteer firefighters.
Wow.
So, definitely, we respond almost our services rely on 80% are some violent accident related, and from
mm-hmm.
that 80%, almost 75% of those are gunshot wounds or stab wounds from crime, and not
mm-hmm.
only in Guatemala City but around the whole country.
Mm-hmm.
So just a brief, a little bit. Obviously, the country, it's Latin America right now has been a hub for the narco trade, for cartels to flourish. And right now that, all these restrictions are taking place in Mexico, a lot of drug cartels have moved south for their protection.
When did that start happening?
Well, the plan right now, when they started talking about the merge of Canada, United States, and Mexico, and creating the AMERO right now during the Obama administration, one of the regulations to be the North countries integrated was to control the narco trade and to control these cartels, which are bringing the big violence in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they enforced some laws. They are making it also a little bit tough for the cartels to recuperate their money and to get their money transferred. So that's the reason that a lot of them have been, fleeing to south, and obviously finding Guatemala a good place to hide and from the proximity that it's with Mexico. And you
mm-hmm.
have to remember, Chapo Guzman, that was one of the major drug cartel leaders, the leader of the Sinaloa cartel, he was captured in Guatemala the first time that that they put their hands on him. So we have all that, all that violence coming down south. And
mm-hmm.
on top of that, migratory laws have been getting much tougher here in the United States, and we have more people deported to
mm-hmm.
Central America and obviously Guatemala. And that also brings crime with it, because a lot of these people don't have nothing going on for them. And when they come and they find the situation and they find it very frustrating, then,
right.
Some of them fall into crime. And another reason that also I think I will say adds to the problem is that the border, one of the toughest borders, is the border between Mexico and the U.S. And when the people get deported, a lot of them find it much easier because of the regulations and the immigration laws to just, say that they're Guatemalans and be deported to Guatemala and try it again, because, to get deported to Mexico is a little bit more difficult. So all the Central American people say, oh, we're from Guatemala, because then, their journey can be easier. So, we have a lot of migratory refugees, and not only people from South America and Central America like we used to do, but we also are finding now people from Bangladesh, from India, from some of the developing countries in Africa, that also, are trying to make the journey, flying through Brazil and then making the journey. And a lot of them find their first bump in the Guatemalan-Mexican border. So I think everything combined is what creates kind of a lawless state sometimes, and it's very difficult to control. And on top of that, the budget in Guatemala is very, very limited. And that's due to a lot of things. First, big companies and overseas companies, the way they attract those companies into these countries is by not paying taxes or paying very low taxes for them to operate. So governments don't make the tax income or revenue is kind of limited to. And all these people also that, are illegal or are poor rely a lot in informal type of commerce. Like, for example, they will sell CDs, pirate DVDs on the street or
mm-hmm.
different things that obviously you get no income on that type of business. So,
right.
The government of Guatemala has very limited, tax returns. And on top of that, obviously, corruption is one of the main things in Guatemala that, sadly, a lot of people are exposed to that. So I think, a combination of all these factors is what we are seeing reflected in the violence that we see in Guatemala. So
right.
Due to that, I came back to Guatemala with an idea. In Guatemala, we have two main big hospitals, which are trauma level one hospitals, I will say, that are mainly a referral from all the country, from the little hospitals that are, spread around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Guatemala has a mixed system. Guatemala has public health and has also private health if you want to pay out of pocket or you want to buy a private insurance. So we have two different worlds. But the majority of the population, 70%, are, you know, in poverty down in Guatemala. And from that 70%, 60% are in deep poverty. So they have to rely on a public system. And the public system, because of everything that I talked about already, these hospitals are overrun. And they are they run with a very low, low budget that every year gets more in debt and more in debt. And they are not able to function to the point where the hospital is supposed to provide to everybody that gets admitted, but sometimes they don't have enough beds, they don't have enough, you know, medicines, they don't have enough equipment.
I read that the last time we spoke, I think I saw an article that you had put out or someone put out that just said that the population, you know, the number of people that need to be served from a system that was created to serve like maybe, you know, a quarter or an eighth of the amount of people that are there today. So it's like that the system doesn't get any bigger at all. It just gets smaller and smaller when you compare it to the, the population coming in. So it's, you know, it's just like you have a school and all of a sudden now there's a big suburb around it and you're trying to send like, you know, all those kids there. It's just the same little school that's been there all this time. So it's horrible.
The hospitals were built in the late 1960s, early 1970s, and they have not been grown or make a substantial remodeling. And obviously the population has grown 300%. So it's impossible, you know, obviously that
the
hospitals are going to be able to serve.
That's the public hospitals, not the private hospitals.
Exactly.
Are probably look pretty good.
Absolutely. Sadly. It's a totally different world. Like if you go to a private hospital there, you know, they have top of the line everything. They kind of even look like hotels instead of hospitals. They're very, very nice.
The concierge healthcare, where people are going. I don't know if anybody concierging to Guatemala, but it, you know, it's all over the world, where you can fly wherever you want, and get whatever you want done.
Guatemala,
you know.
Yes, and actually, Guatemala right now, it's they're ready to start building a brand new hospital with Chinese investment for medical tourists, and according to the Obamacare and everything, they're gonna try to sell, you know, this hospital, which Guatemala is strategic because it's in the center where people from South America and North America can fly, and it's not that long, you know. So that's what they're trying to do and capture all this medical tourism to come to this hospital. So as I was saying, the majority and the reality of the majority of the population down there can't afford private health care. So they have to rely on this public system, which is broken. It's a very broken system, and on top of that has a lot of corruption to the point where 2 weeks ago there was a patient that, you know, was transferred during the weekend, and because it was the weekend, he had to wait, you know, to get admitted on a weekday. So he stayed, you know, in the waiting room of the hospital, and he died there waiting.
That's horrible.
So that's to the point where, you know, it's really, really sad. We have tons of people that, you know, sometimes they're outside the hospital and they probably have just a single, you know, cut that needs stitching. And he will come like 6 hours, 8 hours afterwards, and he will be in the same spot with nothing being done. And, you know, that definitely is not a good care. I mean, wounds get infected, the more that you leave them unattended, the greater chances then you have to have scars or complications or infections or anything. So with that in mind, actually I was thinking how we could serve a little bit better the population. And one of the ideas that I came through the volunteer fire department, which, by the way, as I mentioned, we are a volunteer department nationwide. And the problem with us is that we don't have a fixed budget. every year we get a subsidy from the government to help the volunteer fire department, but we don't have a certain amount assigned. So every year we cannot buy or rely and saying, okay, we're going to buy all this and then we're going to pay it in 5 or 10 years, because we don't know how much money we get every year. So for us, even to buy new trucks, it's a big, big hustle, because this year we got a certain amount, but next year we don't know. Congress just, you know, throws a number, and sometimes, you know, they help us really well, and sometimes we're not even able to function. And, you know, we have to spend in gasoline and equipment and units, and it's a big, big, you know, budget that we have to manage and make miracles with.
Right.
So the idea that I came with was creating what is called medical units, but they're not ambulances. The medical units is a little bit of a copy of the European type of service, where you have doctors that go to the emergency scenes with all the equipment to try to stabilize really well the patient, or even treat the patient there, and he doesn't have to go to the hospital or be transferred at all. So in this unit, what I'm trying to do, simpler, is trying to bring the emergency to the patient instead of taking the patient to the emergency. And one of the reasons Guatemala, also Guatemala traffic and Guatemalan roads are super saturated, to the point where some stations that are in the suburbs of Guatemala City, just to bring a patient during rush hour is probably 3 hours. And if you have a gunshot and you're going to delay that much, even with open siren and everything, you know, he's not going to make it. And these people do not qualify for, you know, Lifelight, or we don't have, or, you know, Lifelight for the public system or in our volunteer fire department, because it's
no
very
helicopters
rare.
Coming out to and take over the traffic like we do here sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. So these people, you know, I mean, it's every time there's an emergency, it's kind of a Russian roulette, and, you know, it takes a lot of luck to see if they're first going to get well attended. On top of that, if they you know, going to make it on time. So this unit that we talked about in the last show, that Giles helped me to put together, was the first medical unit, or prototype medical unit in Guatemala. So it was what we did is I created the system 3 years ago, but it was with a really beat up car, because that's all we could afford during that time. And I don't know if some of the listeners have seen, there's a video from Vice that you can watch on YouTube.
It's also in the link. It's also linked in the last show, and we're in this promo where it says when we last spoke. That's highlighted. So if you hit that, you can go straight to the last show, and see all the links and hear the last show and see the video. So it's pretty easy to get there, and people could just go on your Facebook and see it too. So there's Well, anyway, anything you hit is pretty much going to get you there.
Absolutely.
Because it was awesome what Giles did. Giles did a great job. I mean, that was raw, but it was, you know, it was really good, and it showed exactly what was happening to you. You couldn't even start the car. You know, you couldn't even start it to get down the road. So, you know, and I know, knowing Giles, that he was like going, what the heck? We got to fix this. So, you know.
It was a very old car that a lot of times it was a 1987 Land Cruiser, which was really beat up. And it had so many years, and that was even a donated car that used to belong to the Federal Reserve in Guatemala. And when it was old, they just gave it to us, and then you know we took the time to update it and everything. So with the help of Giles, he actually was the one that suggested when we were on a run, because actually what happened, we were going to a bus accident with Giles, and Guatemala, you know, the landscape in Guatemala is very mountainy.
Yes.
So the city, Guatemala City, is in a valley, but all the surrounding areas are, you know, going uphill and mountains. So the car, it was funny because we were like driving with lights and siren, and we were doing like 35. And all the cars were like moving, and they were like, oh my God, this guy's going so slow. But the car, you know, it was just the way it was. So, you
oh,
know,
no.
The point of, one of the points of having, or the reasons of having a medical unit is that they can assist on the place. But you, can you imagine just waiting half an hour for the car to arrive? It's like,
well, having been on a bus in Guatemala City, I can exactly, I'm like laughing because I can just imagine it, because it's, you know, it's how you're, when you're traveling in a mountainous area and you've just got to, you got to go into low gear and you're going really slow in like a bus where all the cars are like just passing you by. So I know exactly what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
And then you got your sirens on and it's like, oh, we're going fast. How's
absolutely.
That? Oh, gosh.
Yeah, I just had to turn the siren on because I'm embarrassed, you know, of going so slow with lights and sirens. But, so during that time, and during that time that we were responding to that emergency, also the car started smoking a lot. And,
oh, dear.
And Joe turned to look at me and goes like, you know, are we okay? Like, with that look, is this cutting in fire or something? And I was like, no, don't worry about it. This is actually, you know, normal. I mean, the whole cabin gets covered with smoke.
Right.
So
we're cooking some oil, cooking some popcorn in there.
yeah. And the funny thing is that we there was a nurse from Minnesota that she actually died a couple of years ago, but she helped us a lot, you know, gathering medical equipment. So the car was really old, but we were good supplied. I mean, we had defibrillators, we have intubation kits, we have chest tubes, central lines, even small thoracotomy kits in case we needed to perform a thoracotomy on the site. For the listeners that are not familiar with this term, thoracotomy is a procedure that you do going through the chest of a person and accessing the heart and pumping the heart with your hand instead of giving chest compressions or just electric shocks. And you have to clamp the main artery, which is the aorta, the descending aorta, to try to preserve the blood flow to the brain and to the coronary system and the heart. So this is a very complicated procedure, and this is what we're doing on the streets up
there.
That's
amazing.
Of the procedures that we have to perform, otherwise, you know, these patients won't even have a chance to make it. I even remember that there was a time where a grenade was thrown in a bus stop, because that's another problem. Gangs kind of have their territories, and anything that operates in their territories, they have to pay a gang tax. So buses that drive through their territories, the bus drivers have to pay their gangs. And that's the problem. You know, they when they don't do it, they become targets, and the gangs just attack the buses. Then obviously there's tons of collateral damage there. But this time they just threw a grenade on the bus stop when the bus was, you know, picking up people, and there was this 12-year-old girl that was badly hit with a grenade. So, you know, in those cases, you know, you try to do your best and try to, you know, perform and try to save the lives of this poor innocent people that, you know, they just trying to make a living and working hard day by day. So.
Right. And it's funny because you talk about the gangs and all that stuff. I mean, obviously there's a lot of bad people in Guatemala City, but I want to make it clear. There are some of the most wonderful, beautiful, fantastic people in Guatemala City too. I mean, it is a place with a lot of heart and a lot of beauty, and the people are extra super kind. I mean, I did a short mission trip there in the mid-aughts, and it was a great experience for me, and I'll never forget the people I met and how beautiful and wonderful and kind they were. So they're just trying to make it through all this mess just like you. And you're trying to do it with a slow car. And so Giles and came down and saw this thing faltering, and you guys put this GoFundMe together, and then what do you know? I mean, you had what you dreamed of. You had your first unit, and happened? How did that go?
So we finally got together the truck, and we supplied it, and it was already in service. So Almost 2 months after we got it in service, there was it was I even remember it was a Wednesday night, December 6th, and I finished teaching the EMTs. Because what I'm trying to do is not only have these medical units and gather medical equipment, but also training the actual paramedics to become even a step higher than just basic paramedics and can perform all these different type of procedures and advanced medical techniques. So that goes hand in hand with, you know, creating these units because I volunteer, I'm a physician, but there's not a lot of physicians that are willing to do. And actually, I'm the only physician that it's a field physician on the volunteer fire department in the whole country. There's not no other. So definitely, I have to get people also trained and to know what they're doing and get specialized on that. So I was finished teaching this guys when I heard over the emergency speaker that there was a gun shooting going on. And the two units that were stationed in that particular station that I was teaching, they went and responded to another shootout that was really far away from that area. So the only unit that was able to respond to this emergency was me. So I took off and I was driving to the emergency and I was driving to the address where the shootout was taking place when unfortunately in Guatemala City sometimes the streets are not very well lit and not very well signed. So there was a road that actually they closed that road but they didn't have any signs, nothing on it. So and created like a small, almost like a 20 centimeter concrete block to block the street. So obviously during the day you can see that very well, but during it was impossible. I didn't see it, and with the lights on and flashing, and with the siren going on, and you weaving in and out traffic, I was probably doing on that particular boulevard around 70 to 80 with open. When all of a sudden I just feel the car getting a big hit. At that time I didn't even know what happened. The car just hit everything. I flew into the air and then I collided with a light post. And
You did. I can't believe you were going that fast. I can't believe you're alive. My God, that's a fatal crash usually. But I guess the airbag did the airbag deploy and everything?
Well, the funny thing is that, Ford Explorers seem to be right now, their safety features are a little bit better than the old Ford Explorers, but I think the light post hit exactly in the middle of the car that it didn't deploy the airbags.
It didn't, but the whole, and you survived. Wow.
Yeah. So, I was really lucky. I was lucky because the car really, when it hit that concrete wall, that small concrete wall and flew in the air, it was ready to start, turning around and tumbling.
Yeah.
And there were some that saw my accident and they started running. And when I just collided, after the accident, you just get frozen from it.
Yeah.
And then, the radiator and air conditioning radiator and transmission radiator broke. So the car started smoking a lot. So a lot of people that were outside thought that the car was cutting on fire. So they started hitting windows to try to break them and get me out.
No.
When I was like, oh, please don't damage the car anymore. So I opened the door and I was like, I'm fine, guys. I'm okay.
I can't believe you walked away from that without being unconscious. I'm my jaw's dropping. I mean, I saw everything. We've talked about getting this show together, but I had no idea that you had no airbag come out and that you survived that and just walked out the door. That's incredible, Jorge. You had
yeah,
your
no,
angel with you.
Was.
They called you the angel. You had there was an angel with you right there, I'm telling you. Wow.
Absolutely. There was somebody looking after me, obviously, from up there, because it was a really bad accident to the point where, people really thought that, I was really bad injured or dead, because the car was smoking so much. And if you see the pictures that you posted, I mean, you can see the damage on the car. It was really, really bad. So I guess I was meant to die. So
no,
the only thing that
I
ended
alive
up
and
with
do more hard work. So that's
so
good.
I met one of my cervical vertebrates, and I'm still getting treated for that. But for the big impact that I had, that's nothing, because it was really, really bad. And the funny thing is that I was inside the car, and even though the car was smoking and everything, the radio was still going off. And all of a sudden, I reported myself, and my code is Medic 1. So I reported, this is Medic 1 calling, and then they knew that I was going through that gun shooting. So apparently they received the calls of my accident, but they were not sure what was going on. So they were, Medic 1, where's your position? We have another emergency that we need you to cover. And then that's negative. That's negative dispatch. I was involved in an accident in this address, and the radio just went silent because they were gonna dispatch me to my accident, and they probably thought it was really bad because the people were telling me that the car was on. So the guys on dispatch were breathless, and when I talked to them afterwards, they were like, "Oh my God, we couldn't believe that it was you," and we didn't know what to do. So they just, sent some other units and stuff. And obviously they were so far away that they delayed a lot in coming. But thank God, I'm here telling the story. I'm here with you today about
this. Wow. So you get out of the car and you tell them to stop smashing the windows. And you probably were still in shock, so you didn't feel any pain, probably, I'm guessing.
There was a police patrol car, actually heading to that same accident. They were coming. They were just coming in the back of me with lights and sirens as well. When they saw my accident, they stopped, and they were the ones that kind of, took care of me while the guys came, and showed up on the scene. So.
So when did the heartbreak set in? When did the whole, oh, no, not this? When did that, start just, caving in on you? Because you must have just...
That exact second. I was... That car really was the pride and joy of our department. We were, people were taking pictures with it. People were every time that they saw the car, they gave us thumbs up, and they were so proud. And the moment that I hit that post and I knew that the damage was big, I was like, oh my God, I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh no, this cannot be done. That's the thing, if you run on emergency vehicles, and especially, in areas where people don't tend to respect that much, the medical emergencies and stuff. It's like, oh my God, it was a big loss. So, I've been to work and getting a little bit of fundraising to fix up this car. Thank God it was repairable. And
I can't even believe that. That's the second miracle. I mean, I look at the pictures and I'm like, I said, that's total. They're not going to be able to fix that. But the fact that they're able to fix it, and we have pictures of it on the promo link showing all the fixings that are taking place. So, and that started pretty quickly, I guess. Did someone volunteer to help you, or who's doing the repairs?
No, actually, I have a repair shop that it's private, and generally, I know the guy that owns this workshop. So he kind of the car, you know, after the accident, both of the front wheels kind of came out of the car. So the engine was on the floor. The car didn't even roll.
So
just to get it to the repair shop was kind of a hustle. We had to use a kind of a lever truck to, you know, lift the car and then put it in a platform towing truck. So it was even a big deal to get that
just
car
to get
over
that.
There. But so they gave me kind of a fair price to fix it. I mean, the damage was it needed a lot of pieces. It the light post kind of touched the front of the engine, so a lot of parts of the engine needed to be taken care of, and all the frontal axle. But really, I've been asking, you know, for the volunteer fire department funds to see if they could help me to rebuild this car. But really, the budget right now has been, you know, at the end of every year, we run out of budget, and we have to wait the Congress to address us what's going to be the help for this year. So they haven't given us any money, and we actually don't have any funds to repair this car. You know, I've been I have posted on my Facebook page, and Giles as well has posted, you know, for people to try to help. So we've been getting a little bit of help, and you know, as I said on Facebook, any help is a big help, because we couldn't do this if it wasn't for people with good hearts that help us out and help us carry this mission, you know. So slowly, as money has been coming in, slowly we have been advancing in the repair little by little, but we still have a long way to go still, because all the front and the grill, and on top of that, you know, people don't think about it, but it's not only fixing the car, but those cars have special features like special lights, the siren speakers, special suspension, radio. I mean, there's different.
Just the wiring harness alone is like a piece of work, and putting in a new wiring harness, that's not cheap. That's not even cheap, and you can't put in a half a wiring harness either. I used to work in foreign cars, by the way, so I used to work in a parts store, so I even know about that. I know about a lot of things, Jorge. It's really weird.
Well, that's good. That's good. You know, I mean, that's how you have to know a little bit of everything, actually. So.
I know. It's so odd that
that,
though.
It's difficult. I've been knocking on doors and trying. I even created
the calendar.
Exactly, to try to help out with the rebuilding of the unit. The problem was that, you know, the firefighters, really, they're volunteers, so you cannot obligate them to sell these calendars.
Yeah.
And a lot of them didn't even have time to sell them, so I really didn't get the amount of money that I thought I was going to get with a calendar doing. And on top of that, I got a little bit of more losses than earned.
Yeah,
with
publishing is a tough business, Jorge. I'll tell you that. I know about that one, too. Publishing is tough.
Yeah.
But that's
okay.
Lesson learned, right? So, but maybe there is something you could do. Maybe there is some kind of fundraising tchotchke you could send out, like a T-shirt or something. That'd be a little more profitable.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
A little less like
I have to think about things. You know, the problem is that, as I said, I'm so busy
as I am.
Yeah,
you catch your hands.
I have
full.
You're
not the marketing guy. Well, let's.
Project, so difficult.
Well, let's make a plea then. Let's invite some creative type people to come up with some good ideas, you know, that will help you raise some money sooner rather than later, because I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, like watching you with the count, I mean, it was like, wow, that's amazing. I couldn't believe you even did have time to even try to put that together. But, you know, it's basically what you do in your job every day. Like you said in the last interview that we had, you know, you arrive at the scene, you either have what you need or you don't. And if you don't have it, you improvise.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it's it's kind of like, you know, you're never in a different, you haven't, like, the situation hasn't changed. You're now you're in a situation where you're improvising again. And
what I did in the meantime that I don't have that unit is I'm using my private car, and I fitted my car with lights and sirens, and I'm providing the service with my car. But you know, the problem with that is that it's my car. I have to, you know, pay for it. You know, tires, brakes. The car is in, you know, in risk. And but
right.
you know, it's either that or I just, you know, can't continue with the project. So I have no, you know, I'm cornered there, and I just have to do whatever I can do. So.
Well, let's talk about that briefly. I mean, you grew up in, did you grow up in Guatemala? Is that where you originally came from? And then somehow you ended up at the Cleveland Clinic, like the most esteemed, like, heart, you know, surgery place in the whole world. I mean, that's pretty incredible. And then somehow you decided, wait a minute, I'm going to go back to my country and I'm going to try to make something happen, you know, try to make a miracle happen. And, you know, you tried and you tried, and it's hard every day. And then, you know, you get to this point where, like, everything looks like maybe I'm going to be able to do it. And then, boom, you know, you're back to square one. But that's kind of not uncommon. I mean, do you know what I'm saying? I mean, I would bet in your life you're used to seeing that or experiencing that kind of really dramatic roller coaster, you know, ride. At least, you know,
that's what they say. You know, if you fall from your horse, you just have to get up and saddle back in. So, you know, definitely. You know, it's life is not about how many falls you have, but how many times you get up from those falls and keep on going. And I'm positive. You know that. That you know, I'm probably going to get that car, and that's my mission. And I'm kind of stubborn in that sense that if I commit to something, I will get it done. And as I said, Giles is still, you know, helping me out in New York, doing some fundraising. And definitely our doors at the fire department in Guatemala City are open to anybody that wants to come and visit us. As you said, Guatemala is a beautiful place. The touristic areas in Guatemala are 100% secure, 100% safe. This is mainly the violence in Guatemala. It's mainly in the ghettos of the country, because every little town has their little ghettos, and is majorly targeted to Guatemalans, not foreigners. So if somebody goes on vacation to Guatemala, wants to visit us, wants to do a ride-along, because we also do ride-alongs with people, and anybody in any way or form wants to help us out, we are totally open, and our door is open to whatever they think they can help us out, or even if they want to have talks or they want to have instruction. And because that's one of the ways that also we have been getting a little bit of fundraising. Like, for example, a small company will ask us to give us a talk about certain medical emergency techniques that they can implement in their factories or in their offices, or just talking about, you know, getting certified for ACLS, which is the Advanced Cardiac Life Support. We kind of do that too. So, as I said, we're open to everything and everybody, and our doors are, you know, there for them, open, you know, 24/7. So
now you do the job in the streets, though, as a second job, or is that your full-time job, or where are you, because I'm confused as to how you manage.
As I said, the volunteer fire department, I don't earn a single cent. On the contrary,
right.
I have to put from my pocket money to be able to go on calls and to buy supplies.
Right.
So, the way I make a living is I'm the chief of the cardiothoracic service department, surgical department at the military hospital in Guatemala.
Okay.
So that's my day job. And on top of that, I have a medical private practice also with a private clinic. So in the morning, I go to the military hospital, and in the afternoons, I take care of my private clinic or private cases that I need to, you know, perform in the private hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
So But since I manage my own time, I'm on call for the fire department 24/7 because
mm-hmm.
you never know when there's going to be a big emergency that they will need me. So what I try to do is at least go every night after I finish my work and I leave the clinic, I
mm-hmm.
Go to the fire station and I stay at the station like around 10 or 11 every single night. Unless, you know, there's something coming up or there's a patient that needs me to be taken back to
right.
the OR or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I try to be at the station all the time available. And the reason that I'm making this right now is because I'm the only one. So I have
right.
to set the example. I have to set the leadership. And
mm-hmm.
it's also my obligation if I'm training these guys with theory and giving them all the theory, I have to show them also how they have to perform on field. And for that matter, I try to respond as much as I can to the big emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I have made an arrangement with some hospitals to have these guys in their emergencies to, you know, to help out the residents and physicians that are on call. So,
but, you know,
as you see, I mean, I try to expand this.
Yeah. But you need really hands-on. I mean, the kind of things that you guys are – that you're doing – you know, that takes, you've had like years of training and experience and stuff like that. And I mean, just a little bit of training is going to help, you know, in almost any given case, but you have to have the fire for it too. You have to have the passion. I mean, obviously you're
you're
like type A, you know, like you want to be doing this all the time.
No, absolutely. I mean, when I graduated from high school, I was exposed to the U.S. as well because I came for 5 years in a row as a foreign exchange student, only two months over each year. So my vacation time, I actually spent it up here in the States. And I was exposed, you know, to a different way of system. And I have some contact with some with a fire department there in Alabama. That was a place that I used to go when I was a little kid. Then afterwards, when I just graduated from high school, I decided to become a firefighter. As
mm-hmm.
I was in the medical school, which I went to medical school in Guatemala, but my
mm-hmm.
university had an arrangement with some U.S. hospitals to do certain clinical rotations. So my clinical rotations during my medical school, I did them at Tulane in New Orleans.
Nice.
And I always had that passion of being a firefighter, and I always, for whatever destiny is, I cross paths with different firefighters from different cities, and I was exposed to different ways of responding and working. So by the time that I was growing in my career, I never left the fire department on the side. And then I started noticing that if somebody could do something for the fire department, it was me. I even remember when I just went in the fire department and graduated from the firefighting academy, that was in 1990, we used like pickup trucks. And the pickup trucks, the only thing that they had was like a small camper in the back, and they had a stretcher like in the military, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even have gloves. They didn't have dressings. They didn't have IVs. They did not have like cervical boards to transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously by studying medicine and being, you know, and your knowledge increasing about medical services, I started noticing that what we're doing was wrong, and we were doing this in the whole country. And, you know, we have 12 million people that rely on us. So even if there's a car accident, they will not, and you're privately insured, the chances are that who's going to respond to that emergency is not going to be a private ambulance. It's going to be us, because we have the fastest response in the country and in Central America, actually. We're the fire department, the biggest fire department, and one with the fastest response time. So I noticed that, you know, I couldn't have blind eyes to it. I had to do something, and I had to make a change. And it was kind of my responsibility because I knew better. I knew that what we were doing was not right, and it was
mm-hmm.
It was very, very prehistoric, I will say. So definitely.
But you can't be the only person that had your eyes open to that. I mean, you had your eyes open, but you did, you know, you didn't close them again. You know what I'm saying? Like a lot of times people, you know, they might see something and say, well, I can't do anything about that. But
yeah.
You decided, you know, well, I'm going to try to do something about that. I mean, right at this point right now, how are you feeling in terms of, you know, your experience of, you know, having that incredible high that you had the last time we talked and then, you know, just where you are now? I mean, are you just like this is the way it goes and we're just going to get back on the road and just make this this is going to happen and I'm going to make and I'm going to stick with it until it happens? Because you could just close up and go do your practices during the day and, you know, let it go, because it's a lot to ask for one person.
Yeah. No, it's been a very gratifying job. I mean, it's been, of course, a roller coaster ride, because this is just what happened recently. But, you know, I've been in the fire department for over 20 years and just starting a different mentality on the people and making them change the way they thought and they did things, that's a big step. And sometimes people
right.
don't want change. You know, the human nature is reluctant to change. That's why you kind of get depressed if you change jobs and or you get fired or, you know, or you get transferred from city or something. I mean, change is something that humans have to get adapted, but you're not wanting it if you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So it has been a struggle since I started with the program. I mean, I have all type of bumps on the road, even private companies, because some private ambulances didn't want us to be, you know, trained and better equipped and certified.
Oh, okay.
There's money, you know? I mean, they don't want us to be better than them because they're charging for their service. We're doing it for free. So even that, I've been a target of attack of politicians and people from doing this. But also I have seen a lot of people that have been so grateful from what we are doing. And I have seen it in my people at the fire department that a lot of them trust me so much. And they follow me blindly with what I say. Not because...
not blindly. Trustingly. But trustingly, exactly. George. All right.
So that really, you know, also makes you think during these tough times, you know, I just have to keep on going for these people and how long am I going to do it and how many years I'm going to keep on doing it. I really don't know. I don't have a deadline. I just... hopefully I can do it as my strength takes me to and let
right.
me keep on going with it. But
No, well, you're in it for the long haul, and God didn't let you off the hook with that little accident. So I guess you're committed. But I mean, this has been a great talk. I think, you know, I pray every time I see the little pictures when you put them up, I'm just like, oh man, let's get this done somehow, you know. And it's like, I mean, I have my show to offer, but certainly not just keeping this thing on the air is like crazy, and it's nothing. But you know, I think that there's a lot of people maybe can put their heads together and come up with some ideas, you know, for how to generate some funds that would be fun for everybody. I don't know. Too bad we can't do a lottery or something, because people sure like to buy pieces of paper for a lot of money and not get anything back here. But
so if people are listening, definitely they can get a hold of me at my email. That it's JorgeHQ@rocketmail.com. I'm on Facebook. They can look me up on Facebook.
They could go straight to PayPal. They can go straight to PayPal and pay you at Jorge, which is JorgeHiu at Rocketmail. He's still at Rocketmail. So, go to that. Just go right there and drop a 5, 10, whatever you have, and put it in and tell somebody else. And we need to get this done sooner rather than later. And, you know, it's just life. It's just a life thing. And everybody, you know, everybody has that in them. I mean, when I saw what happened to you, it's just you remember those times in your own life when you just were sort of going good and something just completely dumb and crazy, you know, happens out of nowhere. Like, why would they put that little wall up that you can't see at night? You know, and second guessing and all that other stuff, but you can't do it because that's life. And I think that a lot of times people don't understand, you know, and that's what you run into every day. You know, it's just that's life. You know, life is treacherous sometimes, but it has its good high moments too.
So definitely, this is definitely a change. You know, I mean, I'm probably the one that, you know, it's exposed to the public media. And but I depend on everybody that even donates just a little bit, you know, on the pot. I mean, this is definitely a group effort. This is definitely the community responding, the people responding, and any help is a big help. And as I said, this is a chain. I mean, I need any people that are willing to help in any way because, as I said, this definitely is a chain of people bonding together for a single cost or to a specific cost. And that's why also I'm very grateful with you, Annie, and grateful with Giles for being my angels, actually, and helping me out and getting this message through and getting, you know, this awareness on people that there's a different reality just next door in their back patio. You know, that there's people in big, big need. There's people that barely have food to eat every day, that they don't have electricity, they don't have water, they work probably 12 hours a day for $3. So, of course, you know, the life, you know, some people say life is unjust. I don't think it's unjust. I just think it's a different reality. And as human beings, you know, we have to be aware and willing to help others because we never know when we are going to need the help of somebody else.
You got that right, definitely. Definitely. So spread the word, everybody, and let me know if you have any ideas. Let Jorge know. Check him out at PayPal at JORGECHIU at rocketmail.com. Jorge, thanks for taking time to talk to us today. It's always awesome. You're always welcome. You can come on once a month until we get this done, twice a month. I don't care. You're welcome to come on my show anytime and talk because it's greatly interesting. You have a great time in Ohio and try to stay warm, okay?
Oh, thank you so much, Annie. Thank you very much, and thank you to all the listening, to all the listeners for sharing this time with us. Thank you
so much. All right, have a great day. Bye, Jorge. So there you have it. Wow. I did not hear that accident story. I got to tell you, that's pretty amazing that he's walking around because he hit that pole. Wow, you can see the pictures. I don't have to say anything, but just thank you, God, for keeping Jorge Chu alive and still in the game, in the mix, ready to make some big changes in a place that needs them. If you can donate, please go ahead and check out his PayPal. I've said it again, it's in the promo. And then let's listen to Be the Change. And I'll see you guys on Tuesday with Eva Westheimer about Mountain Justice Spring Break. And that's going to be a great show. So come on and listen to that. Here we go. See y'all. Have a great weekend.
See your heart and see what is real. The oneness of the earth is what you will feel. Breathe in deep and let belief go. Be the truth, could you know you reap what you sow. The society's bond that it captured your bond. Open your heart and hear our generation's call. It's time to be the change. What you know is right. It's time to be the change and build a world of light. It's time to be the change and unite as one. It's time to be the change and that means everyone.
You gotta feel the change to lead the change.
You gotta share the change to spread the change.
You gotta give the change to be the change.
So be the change. So be the change.
To let society's ways drive you no more. Break down the lock and open a different door. The balance of the kingdom.